we still have more?
Oh, getting your book. Okay. Good. Well, then, let's get back in here. We've got a couple of questions that came up during the break that I'd like to touch on. First of all, Kylie, do you have anything? Because you guys got to catch a ferry. You covered it. What did you find out?
Scholarships, yes.
Okay.
Experience level.
Yeah, experience level. You can start from ground zero and just work your way up.
Okay, and that's it. Bob.
I have a question related to this.
Do you want the, let's do this here. Wait till the light turns green. There it is.
So, you know, at the AES, we have hundreds of recording schools involved, you know, with their own sections and so on. And the thing that I've been trying to figure out lately, actually, having learned about Kylie's journey, is what can we as a professional community, what can we do as AES to reach into the high schools and find these kids who have a future in our business and don't even know it yet? And I'm curious to know, are you even interested in somehow engaging with the high schools? And is there a way that we can work together and perhaps make little brochures to send the guidance counselors, or what can we do?
Backmasking.
Did you say backmaster?
Yes. Spell on every record. You need to go to audio school. You need to go to audio school.
Well, for what it's worth, we were doing, I'm sorry, what was worth, we, my colleagues and I, because we had a new program, and, you know, a new program, a new expensive program, four-year program, how do you get people? So we actually went around to all of the East Side high schools. We went to Redmond and Newport and Inglewood and did a presentation on careers in audio for video games, because that's what we specialize in, and talk to high schools, particularly their music programs.
That's a good demographic for you, too, actually.
Well, exactly. Yeah, so it was a recruiting technique for us, but it was outreach to the high schools, and I must say it was a two-way street. I learned a lot about, I talked to more high school students, and all in bands and orchestras, and I thought that was, and I would think for the audio, too, that would be the target audience. For us, that was a determination we made. So we did some of that. It's a lot of work.
Yeah.
But it was good, and I'd be very interested to know what else people are doing.
We go to career fairs and do presentations at a 100-mile radius of every school from Seattle, draw a line 100 miles, and we go visit them. And we also get in touch with the guidance counselors, but in our experience, these guidance counselors are kind of stuffy, and they don't really know. Like, the kind of person that would be in the audio wouldn't go to a guidance counselor. Where do I go in the school? I'm serious. I'm not kidding. Like, it's just like, hey, where am I going to go to ROTC and join the military or something like this? But they're not going to go to the guidance counselor. So we have reached out more to the music program, because those people are, like, they're in touch with the students, like, they're generally interested in music in some form or another, and we found that to be just kind of a, I don't know, that's our tribe, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And that's who we're reaching out to.
I know that AI has got a whole fleet of really highly polished admissions people that comb the high schools all over the place, and I don't quite honestly know exactly how they approach that. But I know at Cornish, it's just like he was saying, that's a more personal kind of, their faculty go into the high schools and the music programs. Now, again, Cornish is a music school, but still, they are approaching the high schools directly. And I think it's the individual schools that have to do the outreach, you know, and I don't know of any, I don't think I have anything specific to offer in terms of what can, like, AES do globally. But I think, you know, it's a matter of just hitting the high schools regionally. I would assume it would have to be also local AES that would be a part of that process of getting in touch with the high schools. I think the one thing about high schools that may be a potential, although I'm in agreement kind of what Joe was just talking about in terms of, you know, like, you go through the official channel. The high school systems have a mothership, right? So there is some potential of approaching the districts in the cities to begin dialogue that could then filter down into schools. But I don't know how effective that might be.
Do you have a AES high school student chapter?
I don't think we do.
No, there's student chapters for their college.
They're all
So we're starting our own AES chapter, student chapter. Excited about that. But to think of, you know, students get involved in clubs and they get involved in, you know, high school students and sports and whatnot. So that might be a good, lot more work, but to provide that to high schools, it could just be a door that they could walk through. And they could end up here.
You're giving a packet? Yes.
Yeah. Hey, Larry Manson, I'm with Bellevue School District, and I taught at Bellevue High School.
Let me give you
that. And Newport High School. So I'm interested in what you're talking about with the student chapters. And on that, is it possible to contact student chapters and have them work with our high school students?
It could be kind of like a mentorship.
What we're interested in is, you know, to getting that foot in the door, just see how this is. And there's a lot of students who are looking for recording, you know, especially music for their bachelor's, you know, that they're doing for, or applications for state that they need to do.
All state and all kinds of things. Yeah, I mean, that could be something where college level AES chapters are required to mentor, you know, maybe like once a month or once every 3 months, mentor the high school chapter and kind of facilitate opportunities for them, maybe bring in a speaker or come themselves saying, this is what I'm doing, this is where I was in high school. You know, kind of a pass it forward.
Yeah.
I don't know.
The other thing I'll just point out is that our new president, John Trivett,
is an educator. And following him is Alex Case, who's a very popular educator. So we have 2 years of AS presidents who are like you folks, and we have a real opportunity right now to make some really cool shit happen.
That could be awesome.
Thank you. The other question that came up, based on personal experience of people in the room, is the concept of continuing education. What time do you guys got to leave to hit your ferry?
Now.
it's all about scheduling.
Well, and also, okay. I mean, Bob, really quick, before, like, to have a club, like an AES high school chapter, it's something that they can do right now. You know, it's not something that they have to wait for until they graduate to come to one of our programs, you know? So right. It could get involved.
And if educational materials could be made probably just on the website, maybe a section of the website that is available to the high, and probably be open to anybody, but recommended they go, these are the types of things you could do. Why don't you make a recording in your school? And see, and put it up onto YouTube, and then put a link here of what you've done, for instance.
Well, there's a very successful student competition in the AES for projects, so there could be a great link to that as well.
Yeah, that's cool. And
Bob, can I give you my card? Because I'd love to join the AES and
oh, that's right.
Have some of our students do that.
Actually, I'd like to come visit your studio.
Please open the invitation.
I'm on jury duty for 3 weeks, so I'm downtown.
You like coffee?
You like coffee? I know this.
Soft, yeah. Okay.
Please. Thanks.
Thank you both.
Thanks, you guys.
And so for the rest of us, we got about another half hour to go, so make it easy. So back to our continuing education situation. Keith Elliott just arrived from Boulder, Colorado, shifting his prior to midlife crisis so he doesn't have one. Basically, it's a preemptory midlife course correction, so he doesn't have to get the red Ferrari and all of these things.
No, you still have to get that.
But potentially, yeah. So as far as, and I know that the community college, you have quite a broad range of ages and life experiences that typically that's one of the things the state wants is for people to be able to come back, re-education, and go back out. So how do you all deal with, let's start with Shoreline and work our way back, deal with continuing education, what you'd recommend for people?
So as I was just mentioning to a few people here who just left, actually, at Shoreline Community College, I've got students in my class who are 16 years old. I've got high school students who are going through the Running Start program here in Washington State, sitting next to somebody who's 65, who's coming back to just further their own personal experience, sitting next to somebody who's 30 years old who actually works currently in a recording studio and who's just looking to kind of, you know, broaden their experience in that way. And what we see is that we've got just absolute beginners to people who have been doing this for years. And the anecdote I was just saying is that I had somebody come through one of my classes who had been working in the studio, had interned somewhere, and who had actually been doing some assistant engineering. And he was in my very first class, the very first class where we talk about what is frequency, what is wavelength, and those things. And he came up to me after the quarter was over, and he said, "Jim, you know, I kind of thought that I knew all this stuff already, but coming through the class, it really made me look at things in a different way and think about things a little bit differently than what I thought I had already known." And so somebody like that, when we can encourage them to just gain a further step in their pathway, sitting next to somebody who's just starting from scratch is really what our community college is all about. It's just giving everybody what their education is needing at that time. And while it's not a one-on-one, I'm not sitting there with just one person, I'm sitting there with probably 30 people in my classroom, I'm doing everything that I can to make sure that everybody's getting addressed the way that they would want to be addressed in that situation.
At Northwest, I teach the intermediate classes out of a series of four classes for audio engineering. I teach number two and three. And classes number two is required for all of the people going through the program. And class number three is for minors.
What are those called?
Recording two and recording three.
Oh, okay. Good.
Thank you.
Yeah, there was a controversy over it, but they finally decided on that. And
carry on.
Recording two is usually about 15 or 20 people. Recording three is about 4 to 6 because it's not required. So people that want to do it have a vested interest in doing it as part of their minor. And so I don't quite have one-on-one, but I certainly do have two-on-one sometimes or three-on-one in that class. And I'm able to address really specific finite issues with students in their learning progression in that situation.
Are they typically young, or do you have a broad range of students there?
I would say the oldest student I have ever had at Northwest is 24. And at Shoreline, I have had 14-year-olds and 74-year-olds and everything in between. So distinctly different universes of people.
Steve?
The Art Institute is not quite as varied as what Shoreline's got going on, but similar in the sense that there's a lot of young kids coming out of high school and sort of kids who tried college a couple times, didn't quite work, never quite got around to it, so that sort of early 20s kind of range. And then there's a handful of older students. What happens at the Art Institute, though, is it's a four-year program. It's a degree program. So you kind of, we have had older students that have come through wanting to, like, change directions kind of thing. They might not be looking for a degree, though, because they've already done that in some different direction. They don't tend to finish the program. They come in and maybe take a few classes.
Cherry-pick their interests?
Cherry-pick their interests, but it's also just a little harder because of the prereq sequence and things like that. Mm-hmm. Typically, I encourage them to look at programs like what Robert Ling's got going, Joe's got going with the UW, the more certificate-based, where if it's about, like, I've got a career and I've got an education, I got the degrees or whatever that might be, and I'm just looking for a new set of information, the degree issue's not point, then there's all these other opportunities which I think are better suited.
You don't need proof anymore.
Yeah, well, right.
You've gotten
the
proof.
It's not about that academic credential, it's about the body of knowledge and experience. And so, you know, I don't think the Art Institute or is typically the best place for that kind of students. Occasionally they come through, pick what they want, and go. But.
Joe?
Well, we're talking about, you know, higher education.
We're talking about continuing education.
People who are
coming to it at a different time of their life as compared to just right out of high school.
Okay, yeah. So we do Pro Tools user certifications for people. We train, and people can come to our course, and we do these a la carte outside of our full 9-month program. We do these Pro Tools certifications with them. And we found that, man, there's a lot of weekend warriors out there that want to know this program. Like, and they really want to, they want to learn how to use it. And when I've been a Pro Tools user for 13 years, something like that. It's like the first studio in town to have HD, blah, blah, blah. So when I went out to Los Angeles to get my Abbott certified instructors credentials. I thought I knew that program. So like, I'm going to breeze through this, man. I've been using this. I make records all the time, and I know this. And I'm like, whoa, I didn't know that program. I knew how to use it for what I needed it for, but I didn't know the program. So this whole thing really teaches people everything about that. But to really get back to your question is like, man, we've seen like, you know, like 60-year-old dudes coming in and like and taking this, and I think it's cool. I think it's wonderful because he just like he wants to go record his friends in the garage and stuff, and he wants to know how to use it, and like there's an outlet.
And that's the helical nature of time with the new garage bands now are 60 years old. You know, they were around. Right?
Yeah.
It's old Vanna. I don't know. But I'm old, so if I can say that. Go ahead.
So yeah, DigiPen mostly gets the focus. It's as a 4-year, you know, baccalaureate degree. It's we're focused on high school graduates who are coming in. In our program, we've seen some people who come in with a music degree already, and so they get transfer credits for a lot of the core music courses, the theory and the composition. But they're there for really, if they're not there for the whole deal. There's no mechanism. We don't have any. You know, you can't just piecemeal and take just this. So, but what we have had people come in and do it anyway, just for the really to learn and to network with the video game industry because it's such a new animal and nobody really knows what it is, or you know, it's all new. So we'll get people with already have a bachelor's degree. Most of the ones who've come through our program, it's in music, and then they get a second bachelor's degree. So. Ideally, we would have a master's program for somebody like that, so they can do a 2 years master's, but we don't offer that yet. So, mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's interesting the evolution, and Marley obviously because our questioner is actually going into your course. Mm-hmm. This is optimal.
Yeah, you can start.
You make your own. You rise to the level of your competence. Then.
Yeah. So, students learn in group sessions and also in private. One-on-one lessons. So our program's super individualized. We have one of our students is a paralegal, and she worked back in music back 25 years ago or
licensing
so.
Down in LA.
Yeah, and she, you know, then she got a full-time gig, like many music lovers do, and now she's returning back to her roots. So we have various other students that have families and have been through college already, who have been working for 10 years. We just talked to someone through L&I who's been working, and they've got an injury, and they have this opportunity to go back and learn a new skill. So, you know, really, because we're so small at the moment, we can tailor the program to the individual. And some students have a condensed amount of time. They only have 3 months before they're going to move to LA and, you know, want to start their career there. So we just specialize the program, and we have that flexibility because we don't have a specific start date. But in fall of 2016, the goal is to have specific start times. So that's going to change a little bit. But we hope to still be able to open the facilities to anyone who wants to, you know,
and people can pay to go and record there anytime they want, right?
Yeah, we're operating as a fully, you know, professional studio, so they could do that.
Okay, sweet. Thank you. Did that speak to your question there? Are there any other questions in the audience here that we haven't covered that were burning you need to know? Yes, sir. So it gets on the recording, so it's documented.
I just had a comment. I come from the land of records and television and now games in New York, and everything's dying, big studio-wise, the big facility, the college of the workplace is not there anymore. And it's a real opportunity, and the only opportunity, usually, for kids to experience the kind of camaraderie and, you know, feeding off each other and the ability to make mistakes. I mean, the opportunities that I had in the big facilities, many of which are not there anymore, I feel bad for the kids. I mean, contact-wise, in particular, I don't know how you do it. Everybody's running to their bedrooms now, and it changes the business completely.
I guess you talk to them in their bedrooms through the net, because that's really...
But they don't talk to each other. I learned everything good I know I'd learned from some other guy that's kind of doing the same thing. And, you know, if you tried this, and gee, that takes five steps away, that's...
Yeah.
You know, and that's gone, except for, you know, this scenario, which isn't, you know, 10 years ago was not the case. So it's a selling point for the college experience, certainly.
Well, and especially with the game market exploding, what just happened this week with Blizzard? And is it Activision? Or Candy Crush? Who does the Candy Crush?
Oh, that's a British company. I don't know the name.
Yeah, well, they were just purchased by Activism for, was it $39 billion? Am I saying this wrong?
Something like that. No.
But it's
in the wrong business.
Activision. No, whoever does Candy Crush.
No, it's a little. So yeah, they're sort of they're one trick pony. That's their thing.
Yeah. But one of the things about that is that in app purchases was like $18 million. You know, I've got to buy another candy cane to actually get this level. Here's a dollar. You're going to do it. These people, it's a new kind of addiction. They might as well call it hypodermic crush or something. You know?
So there's an interesting a statistic, which I was cited in that when we went around and talked to high schools, it was sort of, I built my presentation around it, because it was a report from the Bureau of Labor Statistics for the period from 2003 through 2013, I think, or 2002. It was a 10-year period. The United States Bureau of Labor Statistics submits these reports, and of the three top, all jobs are put into various categories with a code, and so the top, the biggest increase was in petroleum engineers, not surprisingly, and then the second one was mining operators, and the third one was music producers and composers. And they were the USA Today. If you Google USA Today Bureau of Labor Statistics jobs report, you'll find this online. So USA Today, they were saying, well, why? What accounts for this extraordinary growth in for music composers and producers? And they were speculating, well, there must have been more television and theater productions. And it's like, no. The Facebook developer app launched in 2006, and the Apple App Store opened. There are something on the order of 10,000 games, I think, available on the Apple App Store and on the Google.
Yeah.
They're more than that again. And all of those games require music and sound effects and voice recordings, and it has to be mixed properly. And most of us don't even know how to do that yet, because they think, okay, well, it's like making a film, and it's not like making a film. It's completely different. So even content, original content, forget implementation. Somebody's got to write all that music. So this is a great time for young people to be getting this business. I think for us who had this experience and go with the great, all of this the business, the music business went down the toilet. It's gone, right? It's gone.
It changed. It's
but
Phoenix.
But now it's something different, right? It's something different again. And I think that's what this is about for me, which is what is this change? How the hell do we make sense of it? And what do we do with it all? And so if you like churn, this is a good time to be alive.
Well, it used to be a one-hit wonder was 224. Now it's just 24. All just has to last for one level.
Okay, you're talking time.
Yeah, 24 seconds.
Good, all right.
Doesn't have to be 2 minutes.
Yeah, I didn't know
it doesn't have to have lyrics. You know. Doesn't have to tell a story. Just has to be like, oh, I'm out of level two.
Yeah, but the need for original content, and I'm talking about original content. You can only license the same stuff over and over so many times. Look at all of these indie games. Most of this composition work is being done on independent games, and the numbers are staggering. And you look at Kickstarter. These people are making their way now. Are they making $1 million? Candy Crush is an extreme. You know, Angry Birds. Those are aberrations. And I guess it's good that they're there, because they drag the rest of us up. But there are thousands and thousands of titles that need music and sound.
And actually, speaking of Kickstarter, those videos that they have on Kickstarter.
All of those videos need sound.
The better the production they have, the better they're going to attract.
And look
as
at the websites. Every website, you know, the approach for audio content, music, sound, and voice, is finally approaching. It's not yet there, but it's something approaching the professional quality that we who made records just would demand. And it's now, because of technology advancements, is starting to become possible in video games. And that's great news for all of us who are working at it.
VR.
Boy, don't even go with it. VR.
Yeah, it's that
spatialized audio, right? Forget all your stereo sound effects libraries. It's all got to go mono now, right? Because it's going to be real-time DSP to place the bird behind your head, and then when you turn, it's going to still be there, right? Mm-hmm. It's not going to move with you. Right, so we're
Microsoft
has amazing
some world in this as well.
Yeah, you guys.
Really?
Yeah. Why did you guys
NDA. Work here? So this is actually pretty exciting, because one of the things that the discussion used to be about is, why are we still doing this? Because everything's going downhill, and we're just sort of teasing. The students.
Let's face it, the music industry has been pummeled. That it's like a little kid in the corner that's been beaten down. I mean, you can't beat that thing anymore. So at a certain point, a person can't be beat. You can't beat me when I'm already down, when I'm done, you know? So that's kind of where I feel like this music industry, the music industry is, you know, it's been my life for it, really, you know.
It's been your life.
It's been my life.
Yeah.
Right. So I really like what Lawrence is saying, because it's really true. It's like it's shifting. So we're going to look back on this moment in history and go, this was a travesty what we did to music. You know, a friggin' travesty.
It's failing slow is what we've done.
Yeah. But the gaming industry, which I think is so exciting, they figured out how not to give it away. Mm-hmm. And these kind of things. So... and Lawrence is right. I mean, like, everything you hear out there has to have been recorded somewhere.
Somebody had to come up with that stuff.
Somebody did it. And that's, you know, Karen and I talked to, students about this, and it, you know, even on the high school level, it's like, what do you do? What is that? You know, they go, what is this about? You know, and we just explain it to them. It's like, well, you know, everything you've ever heard on any commercial, you know, radio, game, every little blip, bleep, and fart noise you've ever heard is
someone had to record that.
You know what I mean? You get the spirit of that. It's like it's there's something cool going on up there. It's pretty exciting. And
we're from my vision, we're in post scarcity. It used to be, there's a couple things about post-scarcity. One was, it used to be like I'd collect Genesis bootleg videos, and they were very scarce. And VHS, and you'd trade with your friends and go, okay, this is eight generations deep, but it's the one that you haven't gotten yet. And so now, go on YouTube, type Genesis, everything is absolutely there. We are in post-scarcity. And it's post-singularity. The other thing about post-scarcity is anything that you can think of exists. So instead of planning's a prison, instead of planning something and then building it and making it happen, all you have to do is actually conceive of it, search, and it's there, and implement it, because it's already there. These things, it's happened over and over again. If there's something I've wanted to see exist, you look for it, somebody's done it. So that's that. But the flip side of it is, what used to be hard is now easy. What used to be easy is now hard. It's very difficult now. Like, for instance, it used to be easy to get paid for music, but hard to get distribution. It's easy to get paid for music by getting a label, right? But now it's easy to do distribution, but very hard to get paid. So these things, approaching, teaching people how to do the newly hard things, I think, is something that schools can do that were easy for us, finding out new ways. But
and navigating this kind of challenging road sometimes. Yeah.
And they'll teach you, too. These people that woke up, the little toddlers that have phones, that's their TV. You know, we grew up with TV on Saturday morning. They're 24/7 in their little phone because parents don't parent still. They haven't for a long time, as far as I know, just from what we're observing. So this, the mobile computing generation is going to surprise us, and we have to be ready for that. Are you finding that, Lawrence, of people that are coming in that have basically been
immersed? Oh, I've
seen
it already. So this is the fourth year now, and I've seen every successive incoming class. This isn't a scientific metric. I don't know if it's the chance, you know, the throw of the dice who we happen to get. Mm. But the level of sophistication is increasing. And we like to say at DigiPen that we don't teach software. It's like, is it Pro Tools? Is it Ableton? Is it Logic Pro? It's like, what the heck? If next week it'll be something different. Mm-hmm. So, but can you teach somebody to distinguish between a good mix and a bad one? Mm-hmm. Can you teach somebody the difference of how to determine whether something's in tune or not?
Right.
Whether something's tasteful or
not? And those almost used to be easy, but are now hard.
Yeah.
For instance.
Also just how to be accountable for the things that they create.
Yeah. And the other thing we find, too, with kids these days is they are in this little world sort of all the time. The best way, I think, for parents to talk to their kids is to text them. Time for dinner. They'll actually watch it as compared. But what we don't see in this three-dimensional space we grew up in is they're actually inhabiting a higher-dimensional plane with all where distance has collapsed.
Well, yeah, I'm sure parents everywhere say the same thing, but just this weekend my daughter said, okay, I'm having a party tonight, or I'm Skyping with my friends in Ireland. And it's like, okay. And sure enough, they had a party, and they were on Skype. She's Skyping with her new friends in Ireland. What does that mean? How do you make sense of that? And then it's the other thing that happened last weekend with the New York Times came the VR, the cardboard viewer. Did anybody see the VR viewer? So it came with the newspaper. You fold it up, stick your iPhone in it, download the New York Times VR app, and so one of the demos was an airdrop, a food lift in southern Sudan. So there is a video with high quality audio. It wasn't spatialized audio, it was just stereo, but high quality audio and video of villagers in a remote field getting airdrop food from some big military transport, and you could hear the thud of these bags. Each bag weighs, 50 pounds. I mean, dropped from an airplane that didn't land. It just, and the villagers going, and the women, of course, carrying the bags. The men helped them put them on their heads, and then the women carried the bags. And this cardboard viewer for a free app that's now they're saying that they'll have a certain amount of their
Google developers.
So again, here's to the notion of content. And yeah. Who had to produce that? The New York Times clearly has it. I mean, they must have been working on this for half a decade, and they must have hired an army of people doing high quality journalism, but it's now VR. And it's all got to have sound and music.
Yeah. So the whole VR.
Holy
thing,
cow!
Like all of these big gaming companies are all rolling out their VR this Christmas.
We started a thing called Northwest Cyber Artists in 1992. It came out of NEMUS, Northwest Electronic Musicians, and it shifted over and it was combining art and technology and getting all these people at the time that were all there were videographers and there were audio people and they were all in their basements. And the intention there was get them all out of the basements, have them work together, and actually make it. So this is happening, and at the time, that's when VR was happening with the HIT Lab, Human Interface Technology Laboratory at UW. It's been around, and they're talking about nanotechnology at the time. And now, it drops. I expected it a couple decades earlier. But now we don't have phones anymore. We have supercomputers. And there's no reason to call them phones. They're multi-purpose supercomputers.
Anyone under 30 doesn't ever use it to make a phone call.
Yeah, right. Because they texted it already. Yeah. So anyway, here we're at 9:57. Fascinating. So what we get from this is we might actually be in the right profession. surprisingly enough, you know,
it actually turned out okay. After
how weird is that? And that's like I had a synth pop band in 1983, and grunge came.
Thank you.
And it turned out to be really quite poor. But if I stick with synth pop, then the 2000s come around, and wow, it's really fresh. It's really cool. So keep doing what you believe. Maintain your integrity. And the world catches back up with you. And then that's when legacy trumps currency. Is because I've been doing this since, you know, the early, my ARP Odyssey in the 77 type of thing, and these people that have only software synths, there is something to that. But then we have the modular synths and all this. So let's do, everybody have a wrap-up. And there's a lot of questions we didn't get to, but I don't think they were as important as what we actually talked about. So, Jim, why don't you start and let us know your thoughts.
I'm just really pleased to be here with everybody here tonight. I'm glad that you were able to talk with us. This has been really informative for me. This is only the second AES meeting that I've been to. So I appreciate the invitation, and I appreciate getting to meet some of my colleagues here who I haven't met before. So thank you to all of you for listening to us.
Thank you. Steve.
Well, I guess the takeaway for me tonight and what I would like to leave you with is the state of audio education in the Pacific Northwest is that the tide is rising. Audio education is getting better. The results of the product of our labors, our students, are getting more technologically savvy, and that allows them to be more creative. And I am honored to be in the group of people who people elect to get training from. And after every AES meeting I've ever been to, I was not the smartest person in the room. And I'm glad they let me in because I learned a lot from the people that were there. So I appreciate the opportunity. I just would like to say a final plug for the Northwest University academic program because I have focused a lot on the spiritual modality of our organization, but we have a fine academic curriculum, and I think that I can say probably from knowing the people that are on this panel for quite a long time, mostly, everyone here is doing a fantastic job trying to bring students into the audio fold and create an opportunity for them to make their own futures in this business.
Thank you. Steve?
Well, echo a lot of what they've already said. Thanks for the invitation, and it's also an honor to be amongst such highly regarded professionals. I think for me, what I think is most exciting is diversity of opportunity. And this is, Lawrence, what you were just talking about in terms of people have been making music forever. They'll always make music. That's never going to change. And people will do it for a whole bunch of different reasons. And it's not always about money. In fact, it rarely ever starts with it being about money. And then we get hungry and have to figure that part out. So what's really changing is where does that music end up? And the opportunities for where this content can end up is, again, what you just spend a lot of time talking about. But that's what I think is the exciting part. So I like that diversification of this industry, that you can still learn these particular techniques, but, you know, education and a whole bunch of different versions of what education can mean are really approaching what you're doing, what you're learning, and what it's for in a lot of different ways. And I think that's pretty cool.
Sweet. Joe?
I'm just so happy to be here tonight. And to learn from you guys, because I think I've learned a lot just listening to you cats. And one day, want to play that Rick bass of yours.
I think we can make that happen. Okay. I should bring it down. We can jam.
Okay.
Thank you. Lawrence?
For me, the fact that being a musician and being an audio professional and then really falling haphazardly into video game audio, what I love about it is the ultimate interdisciplinary activity. Electrical engineering, computer science, music at its heart, which, you know, the Greeks put in the trivium in the top, it was with poetry. It's the ultimate expression of spirit, and about as far as you could, I would think of from some digital analysis as you could get. You need all of that to be in an audio and music professional, and the fact that we get to do this is absolutely an honor and a blessing. It's great to be here.
Good to have you. Marley?
Thank you.
You're the keystone here.
Oh, no. Thank you very much for having us here. All throughout my life, I knew I was going to do something in music, and I've always been a singer and a songwriter. But when I went to Shoreline Community College, you know, lots of people are saying, why are you going to study music? You know, what else are you going to study, or what else are you going to do? Well, now I feel like the students that are coming to us, it's so exciting to be able to show them and tell them about all the cool things that are coming up, because it is becoming viable again to have a profession in music and in audio. So to me, that's really exciting. And I got this really cool Windows 10 tonight. Thank you, Microsoft. And also entrepreneurship. That's something we didn't talk about a whole lot, I don't think. But in every field, but especially in any art or entertainment field, you have to, you know, create your own branding and market yourself and be able to be an entrepreneur. So that's something that we really push too, is people being proactive in their education and not just sitting back and getting instruction and kind of taking things in, but also putting things out and forging your way. So
the Gumby train.
Yes, the Gumby train. And I have to thank Robert for everything that he's done for me and the opportunities to meet everyone here and to reunite with people that educated me. So thank you.
Any burning questions that we have from the audience? And I'll assume not, but I had to ask. And in that case, it's 10:05. I think we had a pretty great evening. Thank you all for coming out. And the people that weren't here don't know what they missed, but they will, because this will probably be streaming sometime from a Microsoft site.
Near you,
which is probably in your office. So with that, I'd like to thank you all for coming tonight. And this has been one of the more interesting meetings that I've been at for a while. So thanks for making it that. And let's have another round for our... Rick has something to say.
I want to thank Ivan Tashev for arranging this room. And if anybody wasn't at the last meeting, I mentioned the possibility of a tour of Cascade Record Pressing down in Milwaukee, Oregon. So if you weren't there, now you're aware. There's a short, crude iPad video on the AES Facebook page, so you can see it. If you've never seen a record press work, well, it's a variation on making waffles. Okay, thanks for coming.